from WCVB Channel 5 Podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Take 5 podcast. Today's guest is Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe, the national NBA writer for the Globe. He comes to us from the NBA bubble in Orlando. We're going to talk about the physical and mental toll that being in the bubble is taking on those down there. We'll also talk about the locker room discord the Celtics suffered after Game 2 of their series with the Heat. And Ellen, I will explain why winning and not Old Spice is the ultimate deodorant.
I can tell you for certain, as someone who is trying to be healthier, that natural deodorant is also not the way to go.
No, I've tried that as well. It does not work. I mean, you want to be healthier, but it doesn't actually do what it's supposed to do. So we're going to talk to Gary, and we spoke with Gary before, and one of the things you were interested in was the food down there, and there are these Rice Krispie treats that he is avoiding like the plague.
Yeah, so last time we spoke with Gary, he brought up these very tasty Mickey Mouse-shaped Rice Krispie treats. I need to know more, and I need to know if he's avoiding them at this point. He seemed very concerned about them last time.
That and more coming up next on the Take 5 podcast.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
All right, now we're joined from the NBA bubble down in Orlando by Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe. He's been in the bubble the whole time. Gary, what's life like in the bubble these days as we get down to the Final Four in the NBA playoffs?
It's pretty much the same. You know, things have cleared out a little bit because 18 teams have left, but it's pretty much life as usual. All the days run together, but it's obviously a little bit more interesting with the playoffs now and now the Final Four teams and all the compelling stories coming from the four teams. So, but, you know, it's winding down. People are starting to get a little bit homesick.
Do you sense that at all with the teams that, you know, teams like the Clippers or the Bucks who had championship aspirations, that they're almost sort of relieved to leave the bubble? As disappointed as they are, they're relieved to sort of get their freedom back?
Yeah, I think everybody kind of feels that way. And as much as they, you know, want to win a championship and be here till mid-October, I think there's a definite level of relief for some teams just to get back to normal life, or as normal as we can have it now, and get out of here. I think that I don't think the players would agree to this again. I think that they're a little tired of all the limitations, even though the families are allowed here now. I think the players are exhausted. I think everybody around here is a little exhausted, but you know, you got to have a champion. So we got some time left.
What's the toughest part? I mean, obviously, you know, you've been down there for forever. I don't even know how many days it's been now, but is it the mental exhaustion or the physical exhaustion of being in this environment?
Well, it's just every day runs together. So everything's pretty much the same, and, you know, the routine of it. And, you know, some days you just don't know what day of the week it is. And there's no difference between a Saturday and a Tuesday because, you know, everything's the same. It's not like you can go out and hang out on a Saturday because it's the weekend. Like, it's the same amount of work. There's games, there's practices, there's, you know, media availability for the players. You know, so everything kind of runs together. So that, I think that's the exhausting part, that there's no, you know, people are kind of saying here, like, wow, September went fast. They had no idea where September went because it was September 1st, a couple, you know, just to seem like a week ago. And now it's September 21st, and oh yeah, football's coming, and oh yeah, you know, the baseball playoffs. It's like people are just kind of forgetting what's going on in the outside world because you're so focused on what's going on in here.
I think that it doesn't matter how famous you are or how much money you have. We're all sort of dealing with the same issues and the same restrictions, and I think it's really sort of humanizing. I think a lot of times, maybe the relationships, particularly today with social media, I think there's a lot of athletes that feel like maybe they don't need us. They can get the message out directly, that the media can be sometimes a nuisance or a hindrance. And I think what's great about this bubble experience is that I think it sort of, you know, humanizes everybody on the same level. Like, everybody's sort of going through the same stuff.
That's very accurate. I mean, the players have to do the same thing we do, take their own temperature and oxygen saturation. you know, we're all going through the same experience. They can't leave the compound. They can't go grab food. They can go into certain restaurants, and they have a few more privileges than we do. But, you know, some of the guys go out and some of the coaches are jogging and running in the same place as I am. So you kind of do build a bond of, like, they look at you like, okay, you're here. You're dealing with the same thing I'm doing, daily testing and the restrictions. There are some things that we can't do, but there's also things that you see the players a lot. You know, they have to go home back to the room. They don't, after the games, they don't shower. Every day they have to go home and clean up. You know, it's stuff that they're being put out to. And I think we all kind of share that common bond.
And how is the bubble? I know I sort of asked you this, but just how have you noticed it sort of changed? There's fewer and fewer teams. I guess everybody's condensed down now to one, you know, hotel. Has that changed life at all with fewer people? I guess in a way, is it even lonelier in some ways because there's not as many people?
Well, it's the same, pretty much same amount of media members. Yeah, the teams have definitely decreased, so you don't see as many guys walking around. So yeah, it's definitely lessened. It's definitely kind of, I don't want to say a ghost town, but it's getting to that point where, you know, you see all the same people now, because obviously it was, you know, 200 and something more people here, 300 more people here just a couple of weeks ago before the playoffs started. So yeah, it's getting to that point. I think people are tired. You know, you're mentally exhausted. The players, the NBA officials who have been here, the referees, there's so many people here who have had to do really a lot of work to make this thing go. So I think everybody's a little tired, but, you know, I think we all understand you're in it for the long haul and you want to see an NBA champion. You want to see this thing come to fruition.
So can you show me, I've heard that there's like these magic wristbands everybody has that allow you, it basically tracks you and it's how you get into the, into your room.
Yeah. These are it. Can you guys see?
Oh,
yeah.
So those are the Disney Fast Track.
Yeah. The Mickey
bands.
Logo. Yeah. But these don't, that's it. I've said, like, these don't get us into the rides and we're not getting to the amusement park. We scan this medically. So if this goes green, we're fine. If we're blue, they send us back to our room to go get tested, not COVID tested, but for the temperature and oxygen saturation. So these aren't for fun. Like, you know, I can't get on the Small World and the Matterhorn and the teacups with this. So no, there's no fun for us in terms of going to Disney World. We can go to the Wide World of Sports complex where the games are being played, but there's gates and there's restrictions. And if you walk past the cones, they'll bring you back and you got to get quarantined again.
I need to know about the food.
The snacks, well, okay. The food has gotten a lot better. Now we get catered food. We get nice food. We can, you know, the food is not bad. But it's the snacks, right? And if you're hungry, I mean, they got, you know, the baked Lays, barbecue, all the chips. They have fruit. They have granola bar. Like, nothing's healthy except the fruit. Like, you literally, and so you end up going against all your dietary wishes and eating stuff because you're just freaking hungry.
And what about the racial justice messaging, which has been such a huge part of the bubble? Obviously, the Bucks were really involved in that with George Hill. And we've seen it a lot with the Celtics, particularly Jaylen Brown. Do you feel, and are you able to have any sense in the bubble that message is getting out to the rest of the country and the rest of the world? And how steadfast are guys in delivering that message now as we get even deeper into the playoffs and people try and make it more and more about basketball?
Well, I do think that there's, you know, I think the boycott did a lot to kind of get the message out. And I think that there's players still saying things and talking, but I think it's become more focused on basketball. What the message the players wanted to get out right now is voting, you know, ending voting suppression, getting people registered to vote. Anyone who is not registered to vote, please go register to vote. You know, that's the message that they want to get across. And I think that they feel like they're getting that across. But I think as we get more and more toward the end of this thing and the NBA finals, it's becoming more about basketball. And hopefully the players who are outside the bubble now can get the messages out that, you know, the NBA wants, the league, you know, the Players Association and the players want. Because I think they can do probably a little bit more work in the communities than the players here So I think that there's kind of a collective effort, you know, speak here, talk here about the issues with things like Breonna Taylor and some of the things that have Jacob Blake, some of the things that have gone on. And then also the players on the outside get to work in your communities.
Yeah, that's a great point, because there were players that were saying from the jump of the bubble, we shouldn't be here. We can do more in the communities. Obviously, there were teams like the Clippers and Lakers after the Jacob Blake shooting and the protests that happened, the non-playing protests of the NBA players that were saying we should shut this down. We can do more. Well, now those guys are out of the bubble, so they should be able to make more of an impact now that they're out, which is what they wanted initially. So I think that's a great point. I also think this is something I believe in. You know, I think the players have made a huge impact in American society. It's not their job, Gary, to solve these problems, but just by bringing attention to them, you know, I sort of hate the idea. It's like, okay, we need to move beyond protesting. I'm all for that, but I'm not sure that's the responsibility of NBA players to figure out solutions to 400, you know, year old systemic issues in this country.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of responsibility to ask them to do that, to you know, solve all racism, solve all police brutality, you know, solve all crime, solve all racial injustice within a summer with a pandemic going on. And also start with, you know, voting in smaller elections too, you know, for judges and for city councilors and for, you know, congressmen. Those, you know, those people also make major decisions when it comes to racial issues and police brutality and police reform. So I do think that the players have taken on quite a responsibility to try to do what's best for their communities and their society, but that's a lot of work. And it's going to take a lot of teamwork from not only players teaming with celebrities, with politicians, with a lot of people to come together for this thing, as opposed to like just the athletes. They need help in this.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I think it's all of our responsibility. It's a collective responsibility as a society. And like I said, I think there are certain people that don't want to hear the message, who use the idea of, you know, actionable actions, for lack of a better term, as a way to sort of diminish the protest. It's like they just don't want to hear about the issue. And they're like, oh, these guys should move past this to, you know, actionable things that they can do. But it's really about, you know, it's not about you saying they need to do something that's actionable and it makes immediate progress. It's just you don't want to hear about the issue. So I totally agree with you there. I think it's incumbent upon all of us to step up with this issue. Just to segue it over to basketball, we're in the Final Four now. It's the Nuggets and the Lakers, obviously, in the Western Conference Final. And then it's the Celtics and the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals for the third time in 4 years. And this is a round they haven't been able to get past. How do you see that Heat-Celtics series right now? To me, it seems like the Celtics are the more talented team, but I think this is going to be a slugfest to the end.
Yeah, I mean, blowing those first two games is really big for the Celtics. I think regardless of what happens in this series, if they lose this series, they'll be kicking themselves about those first two games. Because they could be easily be up 3-0 if they had made a few more plays in each game. I mean, each game came down to the wire. The first game came down to overtime, but the Celtics blew a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter. Game two, probably a more frustrating game. The Celtics led by 17 late in the first half, into the third quarter, double-digit lead, then kind of collapsed, then came back and took the lead, then lost it again. So they'll be looking at themselves in the mirror in the offseason if they lose this series. But they were able to win game three, and I think they made some necessary adjustments to kind of get that victory and take back a little bit of the momentum. So now I think Brad Stevens is going to have to adjust even more, make some more adjustments, and try to get game – obviously game four is the key. If you tie the series, it's a best of three, you know, and it's probably going to go seven. That's – I mean – you know, unless the Celtics decide to win the next three, and they're capable. This is their hope, is to take this to seven. Milwaukee's out, Toronto's out, and I think that they can beat the Heat, but they've got to play flawless basketball. No more slipping up. No more, you know, skids of 8 or 9 minutes scoring 3 or 4 points, things like that. That's what's really gotten them in the first two games. They'll look at those first two games in the offseason and wonder, man, if we won one of these games, we win the series.
How much of an impact do you think that Gordon Hayward coming back for the Celtics? You know, he was in game three, and obviously the numbers weren't, you know, incredible on the the score sheet, on the box score. But how much of an impact do you think that he had now that he's back in the lineup for them and back in the rotation? You know, like I mentioned, numbers not great, only 6 points, but seems to have a calming influence on them. And it's just another playmaker distributor out there.
Yeah, just a stabilizing force. I'll use that word, stabilizing. He's a guy who knows how to run the offense, play point forward. He can shoot the ball. He can create off the dribble. He can shoot the three. He can just do things that he's a good, solid, all-around basketball player. And he knows the game, and he makes instinctive plays. And the Celtics always need someone like that on the floor. I think that one of the issues this year has been their bench has been, you know, very inconsistent. It's a young bench. You know, you got Shimmy Ojeleye coming off the bench, Grant Williams, Robert Williams, you know, Brad Wanamaker, who is 30, but he's only in his second NBA season. You know, Cantor, you know, comes in for stretches. They don't have that bench guy who can come in and just say, okay, like who's like a sixth starter. And I think Gordon is like that kind of guy, that sixth starter, or if you can call Smart that, whoever you choose. But so I think Hayward brings kind of a piece to the offense. Like, hey, okay, we're okay now. We can handle this. I'm not sure anyone else brings that type of stability to the offense in terms of his skill set. You know, so he has a very unique skill set. You know, the ability to run point forward and to kind of make right on-court decisions. I think some of the other guys, you know, Tatum can be a little bit too aggressive and shot hungry. You know, Smart, we love Smart in terms of his desire, but sometimes Smart can make some questionable decisions. Jalen is still learning that role. I think he's getting a lot better in that sense. So I think Gordon brings that kind of calmness that this team needed.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. And obviously his extensive relationship with Brad Stevens dating back to his days at Butler, I think there's a lot of trust there from Brad and his ability to understand and initiate the offense. So I think it also has a calming effect on Brad Stevens too. Looking at the other side of it, I've been impressed with the Heat. What do you think is the key for the Celtics in terms of stopping the Heat? I know Bam Adebayo has been big, but for me, it's Goran Dragic. You know, he was averaging 27 points per game in the first two games, and then the Celtics really shut him down in game three. He only shot 2 of 10 in that game three and really struggled out there. I think he's sort of the key. He's sort of the head of the snake for the Miami Heat.
Yeah, I think that the Celtics probably overlooked him. I don't think they overlooked him. I think maybe the players. I don't think Stevens in the game plan was like, don't worry about this guy. I think he knows how good Dragic's. I think he probably had a lot more to do with the offense they probably thought and expected. He kind of runs the show. He facilitates and then the pick and rolls, and then he's left-handed. So he's kind of an unorthodox player. Then he can draw fouls. He can get to the free throw line. He can hit the three. And then obviously he was just playing out of his mind the first two games. I mean, some of those shots he hit were just very difficult shots. So he cooled off. I think that you have to probably stick Marcus on Dragic. I don't think Kemba is capable of guarding him for a full game and containing him. Marcus gets physical with him. You know, now Dragic does kind of full fart Marcus in the past and did some fouls and some pump fakes and uses some things to use Marcus's aggression against him. So Marcus will definitely have to look out for that in game four. But I think the key is slowing down how they get into their offense and kind of making them a little bit frazzled, because I think that's the thing. You can't let Miami just kind of whip the ball around and then figure out, okay, do we want to get it to an open shooter? Or do we want to run a pick and roll for Adebayo? Or do we want to let Butler or Dragic attack the basket? Like, that's just too many options to try to stop. You've got to kind of put them in a position where they can only do one or two things.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, Jimmy Butler's a star. He's going to get his. It's sort of about the secondary guys, and Dragic, for me, is chief among them. And you just saw the difference in the Heat in game three when you can hold him to 11 points, you know, versus what happened in 1 and 2 where he was kind of the closer for them. Speaking of game two, you know, you've been in the bubble for a long time, and I think this is one of the things people have to appreciate about journalism. Boots on the ground, it makes such a huge difference. And you were one of the people that reported, the first people to report about a disagreement in the Celtics locker room after game two. Emotions were running high between guys, among them Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. I know you've covered a lot of sports over the years. For people that don't know, I mean, you've covered baseball, football, you've covered it all. When you look at that locker room argument, or whatever you want to call it, with those guys, How uncharacteristic was that based on your experience covering sports, and how uncharacteristic was that, if at all, for the NBA?
It was the loudest and the longest I've seen. I've seen, you know, some locker rooms be closed for 15 minutes and some discussions go on. I think people are kind of underestimating it, because it was like, well, that happens to every team. But this was a loud, things throwing, yelling match for 25 to 30 minutes. So that was what was unusual. This wasn't 10 or 15 minutes. This wasn't the coach chewing out his players, or the players having kind of a players only meeting. This was kind of a back and forth argument with some real frustration coming out. And that's not to say that there hasn't been altercations or issues with players. I mean, sometimes these guys get into it on the bench. That's normal NBA or professional sports stuff. But when it lasts for 20 to 25 minutes and there's just things thrown against the wall, like this was a little bit different than what I've ever seen. And, you know, what I found out in there were some guys going at each other. There was a lot of frustration. There was a lot of anger. And it was probably things that probably had been harbored. And when things are going well, you kind of won't bring those things up. But now when things are going not so well, then suddenly some of that stuff comes out.
You know, you had an interesting point in your article, because you're talking about when stuff goes well, that stuff gets, you know, buried. I always say, Gary, winning is the ultimate deodorant, and it can cover up a lot of things that stink. Then when you're losing, you know, that stuff, that odor sort of rises to the surface. When you look at this and sort of what happened there, you had an interesting line in your column where you were saying other people in the NBA look at the Celtics, a relatively young team, Marcus Smart, the most tenured guy. And obviously Marcus Smart's a very emotional guy, but people look at the Celtics and feel like they're a little bit of a front running team in the NBA. Why do you think other people in the NBA have that sense of them?
Because they blow a lot of, they've blown a lot of leads this year, and that they're one of those teams that doesn't quite have that killer instinct. And I think we saw that in the first two games. And I don't know if that comes from experience or just the personnel, but they've got to gain that killer instinct. I mean, and there's been other front running teams. As much as it's not an insult, I just think that gives teams the confidence that we can come back on. I don't think Miami is fears any big leads with Boston. It was interesting that the Heat were saying after game three, like, hey, we can't keep falling behind and expect to come back. So they're getting a little tired of falling behind, but it's because the Celtics close this one out. But I do think that the Celtics don't do the same things when they get leads as to get those leads. They play around with the game. They make individual plays. They make silly plays. They try to make the spectacular play. The Celtics mess around with three or four possessions, and suddenly 16-point lead is down to 11 or 10, and a 10-point lead in the NBA is nothing. So the Celtics have to play and follow through and play better with leads, and I think that's what teams around the league understand that.
So is it just an on-the-court, you know, thing other teams see, where what you said, they don't fear having to come back against the Celtics because they feel like maybe they'll relax a little? Or is any of it sort of about emotional maturity and emotional equanimity, the idea that when they're doing well and they're dominating, you know, they're going to tell you how good they are. And then when things aren't going well, maybe you have a situation like you had after game two. Do teams look at the Celtics and say maybe the emotional maturity and resolve isn't quite there yet?
I do think that there's, I mean, when you have your best player is 22, your second best player is 23, the question is, when are they going to realize and become about the team and less about the individual? Because that's a process in the league. You know, not very few players come into this league and it's like, all I want to do is win. Most of these guys, they want to get the All-Star. They want to get the All-NBA. They want to get their points. And I think that when you challenge the Celtics, it's like, you know, are guys completely in on doing whatever it takes to win the game? And I think mostly they are. But I do think that there's been some bouts over the last couple of, you know, this season and in the playoffs with selfish play or hero ball or things that mature teams don't do. And I think that the Celtics are gaining at maturity. I don't think that they'll forever be front runners. I just think teams look at them and go, when your best player is 22, your second best player is 23, you know, do you have that player in there to go, listen? And Marcus, as much as Marcus has been around, is just 26. So, you know, do you have that 33-year-old in there to say, hey, guys, like, let's do what got us here. Stop the hero ball, move the ball around. If you don't have a shot, is that Kemba? And when Kemba's struggling, does he have that authoritative voice to say, hey, guys, let's do this? And he's 2-for-11. These are some of the little weaknesses that they have. That doesn't mean they can't win this series. Doesn't mean they can't get to the finals. Of course they can. But this is things that maturity and experience has to fix.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting the way you put that. You know, you're saying your best player is 22, Tatum, second best 23. Sometimes I wonder if the guys on the team look at it that way. In other words, is the pecking order clear to them? Does somebody like Smart say, well, no, you know, I'm up there. I'm equal with them. Or obviously Kemba's accomplished so much in the league. He's been, I think, a much better mentor for them than Kyrie. You know, Kyrie, I think, was at a point in his career where he still had a lot to prove and wanted to prove he could have his own team. It seems like Kemba's comfortable sharing the stage with Brown and Tatum. And what that leads me to is, you know, who's the leader on this team? And is there a clear pecking order?
I think there's a lot of leaders. I think that Smart and Brown are probably two of the emerging leaders. I think Tatum is getting more of a voice because of his status as an NBA player and first-time All-Star, a guy who understands that he's grown up and maturing. You know, he's a father. So I think Tatum, but I don't think Tatum is that guy who's going to just pull a guy aside and go, hey, dude, you need to do this, that, and the other. That's more like Smart. And I think Brown's kind of the voice of reason in saying, hey, we all need to come together. We all need to be better. And Brown is a very confident kid. He has no problem calling anybody out or going against something he doesn't feel is right. So that's why he did go in some cases last year against Kyrie. He didn't have the, oh, I respect you, you're an Olympian, NBA champion, anything you say is right. No, he didn't feel that way. So I don't think that they have an unquestioned leader. I think they have leaders in different situations. Kemba's a leader by example. He's kind of the encouraging guy. Tatum's the guy who's going to work as hard as anybody to improve and get better, and he wants those to follow him in that work ethic. And same with Smart. Smart's going to work hard, but Smart's going to be, you know, the toughness, the spiritual leader of the group. And Brown, I think, is a guy who is kind of like, let's get everybody together. Let's play as a team. You know, the collective effort. You know, he's a natural born leader. So I think guys are growing into their role. So it's kind of, they don't have one particular leader. They don't have a guy that, they don't have a Jimmy Butler type who's like, listen, I've been in the league 10 years. I've been around. You could say Kemba has been in the league 10 years and has been around, but he's more of an encourager than he is a leader. Jimmy, and we've known him from his previous stops in Minnesota and Philadelphia, Chicago, is going to chew his teammates out. He's going to come down on guys for not working as hard. I don't think Kemba's that type of guy. And he doesn't need to be that type of guy. That might be Marcus, but I also think that they're just growing into their leadership roles. And I think that's a good thing. I think that, you know, and that's trial and error, as you know. I mean, not everybody's a great leader right away. It takes guys 5, 6, 7 years to become leaders in locker rooms and clubhouses. So this is just a process, but that's the thing. When you put a bunch of young guys on the floor, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, there's a lot of little things going on that the team has had to figure out on the fly because they are so young. And I think that's understandable.
Yeah, you know, I agree with a lot of what you said there. I think, you know, Jaylen Brown to me is the best sort of combination of Tatum and Smart. I think he has a lot of the best qualities of both of those guys. And I also think this is sort of a situation where Brad Stevens needs to step up. I think that's one of the questions about Brad is his ability to coach teams with those type of guys you mentioned, with guys who are coming into the league, ballyhooed, that have egos. It's not guys that he's giving a chance to or the underdog guys all the time that are just happy that he's putting them on the main stage. It's like these are guys who expect to come into the NBA and be, you know, all NBA, be all-stars, win, you know, defensive player accolades. And that's a little bit different than, you know, coaching guys who maybe are looking for a rebound sort of in their career or haven't been the featured guy before. And that's a little bit, I think, of the knock on Brad. So we're going to get you out of here on these final two. One, give me a prediction. I always say this. I hate predictions, so I hate to do this to you. Prediction's an occupational hazard for sports writers and sports journalists. But Heat Celtics, who do you have for the series?
Boy, that's a tough one.
It's tough. I'm with you.
You know, I think the Celtics can pull it out. I'll say the Celtics.
Okay, a lot of conviction there. Also, last one for you. Have you been able to avoid those Mickey Mouse desserts that we talked with you earlier about
Oh, yeah.
In the bubble?
And they have these things that I have not tried yet. They're like Rice Krispie treats shaped like the Disney.
Like Mickey Mouse?
Chocolate on the two ears. And I heard those things are like literally addictive. I'm not touching them. And those things are plentiful.
So, yeah, I have not had any of those Mickey Mouse Rice Krispie treats with the chocolate tips. Nope, avoided them.
That might be the most amazing statistical streak that anybody has accomplished in the NBA bubble. Gary Washburn, that is enormously impressive. Thank you very much for joining us today. We know you're a busy man, always on the go in that NBA bubble. Stay strong down there. You're doing a fantastic job. A lot of people are really enjoying your work. You're helping a lot of people connect with the NBA, and we hope that you're able to come home soon, too.
Well, thanks. Appreciate it, Chris.
That was Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe joining us from the NBA bubble in Orlando. Thank you very much for listening to the Take 5 podcast. We would appreciate it if you would subscribe, rate, and review. That helps others find the podcast.